This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
It feels like we're all being told to go on this diet, take that supplement.
Ozempic will give you depression, but you know what'll cure that? Weed. Or you could try to balance your hormones. At Science Versus, we're like,
what the f*** is going on?
Forget the crap online and listen to Science Versus. Just the facts. Oh, and a bunch of stupid jokes.
What is a ghost's favorite fruit? Booberries.
That's Science VS. New season out on Spotify soon.
This episode contains graphic descriptions of medical afflictions that some people may find disturbing. We advise caution for listeners under 13.
The Royal Free Hospital's 1998 vaccine panel was supposed to follow routine in the medical field, just like the vaccine the five invited doctors were there to speak on. Unfortunately, this discussion of the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, otherwise known as the MMR shot, would be anything but regular.
Scientists, professors, reporters, and aspiring medical students all milled about before taking their seats. They knew that one of the panelists, Dr. Andrew Wakefield, had received hundreds of thousands of dollars through his medical school, the British government, and private donors to fund his research on the vaccine. They were eager to hear his results, to watch another disease fall like a domino in the face of science.
As flashbulbs popped, Dr. Wakefield stepped up to the microphone. But the words he started to spout were not in support of the MMR vaccine. He claimed that his research had proven just the opposite.
He claimed autism could actually be caused by the MMR vaccine. But by now, it had already been administered to millions of children all over the world.
Andrew Wakefield had just become the father of the anti-vaccination movement. And the confusion he introduced was about to go viral. When our bodies fail, we trust doctors to diagnose the problem. But medicine isn't always an exact science. Sometimes it's a guessing game with life or death stakes.
This is Medical Mysteries, a Parcast original. I'm Molly.
And I'm Richard. Every Tuesday, we'll look at the strangest real-life medical cases in history and the experts who raced against the clock to solve them.
As we follow these high-intensity stories, we'll explore medical research that might solve the puzzle. Next week, in part two, we'll analyze all the evidence and try to find an answer.
You can find episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. To stream Medical Mysteries for free on Spotify, just open the app and type Medical Mysteries in the search bar.
At Parcast, we're grateful for you, our listeners. You allow us to do what we love. Let us know how we're doing. Reach out on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
This is our first episode on Andrew Wakefield, a physician and anti-vaccine activist. Wakefield convinced millions of people that vaccines could cause developmental delays and disorders in children.
This week, we'll explore how Wakefield came to this dangerous conclusion, how he got his funding, and how he parlayed that into an entire movement. Is it possible that Andrew Wakefield genuinely saw a connection between these diseases and the vaccine? Was he a well-meaning but misguided doctor, or a medical con artist.
Next week, we'll see how Wakefield's influence began to permeate the United States. His movement caused new waves of paranoia as parents stopped vaccinating their infants. We'll also see how his campaign may have caused nearly extinct diseases to reappear for the first time in decades.
Vaccination is the most effective method for preventing disease. It's so widespread and routine, most of us don't even remember getting our vaccines as children. Not to mention keeping track of what we've gotten by adulthood. Or if we got the flu shot this year or the year before. But with this routine, the scarier question becomes, do we know what we're shooting into our body when we do get vaccinated?
According to the Department of Health and Human Services for Australia, vaccines are made of dead or weakened versions of diseases that actually strengthen the immune system. Technically, they're a training dojo before the real fight.
And they work like this. As the immune system realizes the body is under attack from a disease, antibodies trace the contours of the disease, making a mirror image. Once the antibodies finish that mirror image, the immune system is able to dismantle the disease by adhering to it perfectly.
Antibodies have an excellent memory and retain their instructions. So if the disease returns, the body is ready to fight. The downside is, when we first get vaccinated, the body is at risk of getting the very disease it is trying to protect against. But the risk is so low that scientists have determined vaccines are still the safer choice.
Vaccines are responsible for the eradication of several dangerous diseases: smallpox, rabies, polio, tetanus, diseases that used to infect and slaughter huge populations are essentially extinct today.
Vaccines are an incredibly important part of modern public health, and we aren't out to discuss whether one should or shouldn't vaccinate. We're here to investigate the mystery of what Dr. Andrew Wakefield knew and why the anti-vax movement spread across the globe.
When Andrew Wakefield began promoting his anti-vaccine theories in 1998, it was actually the latest development in a long history of vaccine controversy.
The first account of inoculation actually originated in the 1600s in China, during the reign of Emperor Kangxi. The emperor survived smallpox as a child. Later in life, he found that grinding up smallpox scabs and blowing them into his children's nostrils actually inoculated them from the disease.
The emperor later said, "I had inoculation used upon you, my sons and daughters, and you all passed through the smallpox in the happiest possible manner."
This nostril-snorting form of inoculation, known as variolation, was essentially the world's very first steps towards vaccination. However, it was centuries before inoculation saw widespread use.
Despite the emperor's discovery, smallpox continued to kill people across the globe, including 90% of the native people of the Americas.
Smallpox reached Charleston, South Carolina in 1738. However, a British doctor known to history as Dr. Mowbray had experience with variolation. He introduced the inoculation technique to the people of Charleston, transferring infected pus and blood from one unhealthy person to another.
It may have seemed disgusting, but it was effective. Out of the 441 people inoculated in Charleston, only 4% died, compared to 18% of non-inoculated people.
By 1759, William Heberden, a UK physician, was one of the very first doctors to encourage his patients to inoculate their children against smallpox. Cotton Mather, a prominent Puritan minister, began preaching that inoculations were actually a gift from God.
But others felt that inoculation was the devil's work and believed ailments like smallpox were a sign of God's divine judgment, not to be interrupted or interfered with.
In 1796, English naturalist Edward Jenner took great interest in the fact that milkmaids never seemed to get smallpox, despite constantly handling infected blisters on cowpox-ridden bovines. He began to wonder if infecting someone with cowpox could protect them from smallpox.
Jenner had extensive knowledge of surgical and medical practice, as well as a background in biology, so he was extremely qualified for this study. In May 1796, he found a dairymaid by the name of Sarah Nelms, who appeared to have cowpox lesions on her hands.
He decided to take the matter from her cowpox lesions and test his theories of inoculation by injecting them into an 8-year-old boy named James Phipps. James fell ill for a few days, but only developed a mild fever and some loss of appetite.
After he recovered, Jenner inoculated the boy again with matter from a smallpox lesion. This time, no disease developed.
Before Jenner, people thought the only way to inoculate from one disease was to give the patient the same disease. But Edward Jenner discovered that dosing a patient with one disease could help inoculate against a completely different condition.
This was a huge scientific achievement. It lowered the risk of patients contracting a disease post-inoculation. But Edward Jenner's report on his breakthrough was rejected by the Royal Society, mainly because it seemed too risky. But that didn't stop Jenner from testing his methods on his own son. And he too remained healthy. Unfortunately for Jenner, the Royal Society debated his findings for years.
But that didn't stop the findings from spreading. Jenner continued to promote his findings throughout his lifetime. Spain began mass vaccination programs for its colonies in 1803, and soon other developing nations began to follow suit. By the 1820s, there was a decrease in mortality within smallpox cases, from 18,447 deaths in London to only 7,858 deaths.
By the 1900s, Jenner's pipe dream of a world without infectious diseases was becoming less of a dream every day. The CDC reported that measles in the United States alone decreased from just over 763,000 in 1958 to less than 150 cases a year.
And by 1977, it was common practice for parents to have their children vaccinated. By the end of the 20th century, 11,000 infants in the United States were being born a day, each expecting to receive 15 to 19 vaccines in their first 18 months of life.
As a result, many world populations developed herd immunity. Essentially, it's the idea that the more people vaccinated, the more unlikely it is that an outbreak will occur. Without herd immunity, one person can cause a massive spread of infections over a relatively short time.
For example, in 2014, an Amish community in Ohio was dramatically affected by 350 new cases of measles. The outbreak was traced to a single man who brought the disease back from the Philippines. While most of Ohio was safe, the Amish community, who did not vaccinate, faced an epidemic.
The Amish have avoided vaccinations for a variety of reasons, but mostly they see it as a risk to their health rather than a benefit. Additionally, it compromises their religious beliefs by placing their faith in man over their faith in God.
The Amish people who do not vaccinate rely on the herd immunity of the wider United States. If a disease is eradicated here, they won't be exposed.
But this brings us to one of the most dangerous assumptions about vaccines in modern times, an idea that became more prevalent around the time Dr. Andrew Wakefield began his vaccine studies in the 1990s. When the majority of the population is inoculated, a single individual cannot be infected.
This creates a unique paradox when it comes to vaccines. The more effective a vaccine is, the less we think we need them.
And the more common vaccines become, the less familiar we become with the diseases that they cure. Out of body, out of mind. Take polio, for example. A disease that would be extremely strange and alarming to see in someone today because we have inoculated it entirely. No one is concerned with catching a disease that their parents hardly remember.
Anti-vaccination groups, which have been around since 1796 when Edward Jenner released his findings, are perpetuated by this concept. Some people's fears run even deeper, believing there's an imaginary elite seeking to control the entire nation through forced, poisonous vaccination.
Which was how JABS was launched in January of 1994. JABS, or Justice, Awareness, and Basic Support, is an anti-vaccination group which argued that the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine caused brain damage and other problems in children. Scientists universally regard this as a myth. However, JABS followers were loud and growing in number. Sensational coverage appeared in UK tabloids with headlines like, "My son went bald after his measles jab."
However, the group didn't really take off until a scientist joined them, British physician Andrew Wakefield. Dr. Wakefield's credentials were impressive. They made people believe his research was legitimate, and he claimed that he had made a profound discovery, one that caused thousands of concerned parents to worship him.
Much like Edward Jenner, who was mocked for his vaccination theories yet continued to advocate for change, Andrew Wakefield clung to his findings. Once Wakefield made a claim, he would go to great lengths to promote it. The trouble was, Dr. Wakefield claimed he had discovered irrefutable proof that there were actually dangerous repercussions to getting vaccinated, and this had been kept a secret for decades.
Coming up, Wakefield goes to great lengths to prove that vaccines cause incurable diseases and disorders. Now back to the story.
Born in 1957, Andrew Wakefield was the son of a neurologist and a general practitioner. A career in public health seemed inevitable.
Growing up in the 1970s, Wakefield was the head boy at his private school in Britain. He was a natural-born leader, an influencer. But he was also athletic, an amateur rugby player, which he juggled with receiving his doctorate by the young age of 25.
Being the son of two doctors, Wakefield was used to authority. He understood what it took to sustain the appearance of professionalism. But on the other hand, he was attracted to the myth of the underdog doctor who could discover new cures to terrible diseases. Wakefield strived to become that hero.
Soon, Wakefield began working as a transplant surgery researcher, studying tissue rejection problems in small intestine transplants. It wasn't long before he was promoted to senior lecturer at the Royal Free Medical School in London. But suspiciously, Wakefield only published three research papers in the first decade of his career. Typically, postdocs publish one or two papers a year.
And Wakefield's papers all revolved around Crohn's disease, an autoimmune disorder that can cause the body to incorrectly identify food as invasive material. The immune system then attacks the perceived threat, and white blood cells coat the walls of the small intestine, leading to painful inflammation. As of today, the disease remains incurable.
But Wakefield argued that Crohn's disease didn't actually come from the immune system's reaction to food as a threat. Instead, Wakefield was convinced it occurred because of the clogged blood vessels in the walls of the gut.
Wakefield came to this conclusion after flipping through a textbook on the study of viruses. He read a description that claimed a form of ulcers came from the measles. But Wakefield saw the exact same condition in those who had Crohn's disease. He started to wonder, was measles the cause of Crohn's?
If Crohn's was linked to measles, this could have led to a revolutionary treatment for those with Crohn's disease. However, this link remained speculative. and Wakefield's peers believed he didn't have enough evidence to support his conclusions.
Wakefield continued his studies and never found a reason to revise his theory. In fact, his colleagues' critiques only reinforced his certainty. He was stubborn, and now he was hell-bent on proving that this discovery could have global implications.
In 1993, Wakefield submitted a paper to the Journal of Medical Virology with information that he believed proved Crohn's disease was caused by the measles virus. A panel convened to analyze and confirm Wakefield's data. But the panel found that his data was so weak that his conclusions were basically meaningless. So Wakefield tried again.
Wakefield knew hundreds of thousands of people suffered from Crohn's every year, and he wanted to be the one to cure the disease. He published another paper examining the link between measles and inflammatory bowel disease. But once again, Wakefield could not provide concrete evidence to connect the two.
Academic panels again debunked him. Teams in the United States and Japan even attempted to replicate his findings, but they too discovered no link between measles and Crohn's.
It was then that Wakefield teamed up with a PR company who was willing to help spread his theories, despite the lack of hard facts. After hiring this PR team, Wakefield made a third attempt at convincing the academic community with yet another paper.
This paper claimed that when given together, the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccines could cause measles to invade and damage the intestines. This reaction could then move up to the brain, causing irreconcilable harm to the neural systems.
This caught the attention of a man named Richard Barr.
Barr was a lawyer employed by the anti-vaccine group JABS, and he pushed Wakefield to examine a third link, this time between autism, Crohn's, and the MMR vaccine.
It's not exactly clear why Barr wanted to include autism in Wakefield's research, but it is clear he was a lawyer who stood to profit if he could sue vaccine manufacturers on behalf of JABS. Most likely, Barr knew autism was understudied. He saw dollar signs and he pointed Wakefield in their direction.
Barr began wiring Wakefield money, £150 an hour plus expenses, to support JABS' attack on the MMR manufacturers. This broke ethical protocol regarding scientific experiments. If a scientist was receiving money for producing supporting evidence during an experiment, then that could certainly influence the results.
The idea of a profit definitely motivated Wakefield to elevate his studies, which made it appear as if Wakefield was in this line of work for all the wrong reasons.
And the money wasn't just coming from Barr. Wakefield was also able to get £50,000 from the British government's legal aid fund. By the mid-1990s, more than 1,000 worried families had joined JABS' class action lawsuit against vaccine manufacturers. The British government had agreed to help pay for the defense. Defense that now included Andrew Wakefield.
In this convoluted way, the British government ended up bankrolling the lawsuit and subsequently Wakefield's research.
The anti-vax movement had been present since vaccines were invented, but if Wakefield was promising to turn up results, the movement now had some fire behind it. If vaccines did prove to be the cause of disease, these families stood a chance at receiving billions in compensation for their hardships.
Now, Dr. Wakefield was receiving hundreds of thousands of pounds in personal payments from Barr, who had a vested interest in making sure that Wakefield's evidence proved vaccinations were harming children. Barr even found patients for Wakefield to include in his study, like 8-year-old Michael, whose name has been changed to protect his identity.
Michael's mother was convinced her son had autism, and she believed it had appeared as a result of his MMR vaccination. Michael was admitted to the Royal Free Hospital in the fall of 1996 after experiencing severe bowel issues. Here, he was diagnosed with Crohn's disease.
39-year-old Andrew Wakefield was shocked to hear this diagnosis. This information actually supported the theory that certain irreparable ailments, such as autism and Crohn's disease, were linked and caused by MMR vaccines. Michael had Crohn's and autism because of his vaccination.
Wakefield looked at Michael's charts. Michael was vaccinated when he was 15 months old in November 1989. Shortly after, Michael's mother noticed behavioral changes and joined jabs. She blamed Michael's vaccines for his poor health.
Within a week after Michael was diagnosed in 1996, Wakefield revealed an 11-page draft of his paper linking vaccines to autism and Crohn's disease. This would come to be known as the Lancet paper, now infamous in medical circles.
In the paper, Wakefield hypothesized that some children were unable to handle three vaccines at once. As a result, the measles part of the vaccine landed in the small intestine, where it caused a leaky gut. He then argued that opioid peptides that are naturally produced during digestion escaped through the porous leaky gut and breached the blood-brain barrier, overwhelming children's brains.
And the study didn't end with Michael. Wakefield investigated 12 children who supposedly acquired developmental and gut disorders after receiving the MMR vaccine.
He went through prior medical and psychological records of the children, including details of previous immunizations and exposures. He noted that five of the children had a bad reaction to the measles, mumps, rubella vaccination when it occurred. They had rashes, fevers, convulsions, and delirium.
After examining their medical histories, he began performing tests. Wakefield took MRIs and EEGs. Controversially, Wakefield performed painful ileocolonoscopies on the children. An ileocolonoscopy is an endoscopic evaluation of the ileums, a portion of the small intestine and the colon. It's now considered invasive for children and a procedure that should be avoided unless necessary.
In the paper, Wakefield concluded that all 12 children developed autism, colitis, or both as a direct result of the MMR vaccine. He tried to exemplify this research by pointing to each patient's gut. Wakefield identified what he called a red halo, swollen lymphoid and enlarged ileums.
Wakefield also claimed half of the children in his study developed digestive issues, gut problems, and autistic traits only days after being vaccinated.
But because Wakefield's Lancet study was partially based on patients' experiences and anecdotes, and not on a formal experiment, it relied heavily on speculative conclusions. Additionally, most of the children's parents in Wakefield's study were ardent anti-vaxxers, an already biased group who were giving him evidence based on how they perceived history.
The Lancet paper was nothing more than a case series, a collection of detailed stories about patients' medical backgrounds. Case series are generally regarded as the weakest kinds of medical studies.
Questionable methods aside, the paper was still published. In 1998, Wakefield prepared to reveal his Lancet paper at the Royal Free Hospital press conference. Wakefield was about to become the underdog doctor he always dreamed of becoming, a white horse savior to the medical community. And Wakefield could not be more excited.
But what he didn't consider was that it would horrify parents and prevent them from immunizing their kids, possibly leading to outbreaks and countless deaths all over the globe.
Coming up next, Wakefield's startling results are announced to the public, causing shockwaves throughout the UK and abroad. Now, back to the story.
Dr. Andrew Wakefield believed he'd made a medical breakthrough, and he was prepared to share his research at a massive televised press conference in the Royal Free Hospital on February 26, 1998. Journalists were invited and came in droves.
As flashbulbs popped, Wakefield stepped up to the mic and dropped a bomb that would ripple throughout the medical community. With the debate over MMR that has started, I cannot support the continued use of the three vaccines given together. My concerns are that one more case of this is too many.
He went on to clearly state that he believed the MMR vaccine was causing inflammatory bowel disease and autism in young children who received the vaccination.
Now people were shouting, panicking, the room exploding with chaos. It was more than likely that most of the people had already given their child the MMR vaccine. To learn that these vaccines may have caused any number of developmental disorders was a terrifying reality that everyone might now have to face.
The dean of the Royal Free Hospital, Professor Ari Zuckerman, tried to get the room under control. He didn't expect Wakefield to make such an incendiary statement. Zuckerman tried to reassure the crowd that the MMR vaccine was safe, saying, if this were to precipitate a scare that reduced the rate of immunization, children will start dying from measles.
But it seemed no one wanted to hear his side of the argument.
The news opened a floodgate of rumors, which now permeated throughout the city of London. As expected, frantic parents called the hospital phone lines about the news. But they were given a fact sheet that Wakefield had designed himself and told to direct their questions to their pediatricians, causing further hysteria.
The London press took the side of the rogue doctor who had come up with a radical explanation rather than the less appealing scientific evidence.
Next morning's sensational headlines showcased the risks of vaccinations. Ban 3-in-1 jab, urge doctors after new fears, and doctors link autism to MMR vaccine.
The national vaccine rate dropped over 10% in the UK over the late 1990s, with even larger drops in some parts of London.
By 2003, 5 years after Wakefield's announcement, the U.S. vaccination rate among two-year-olds fell to 78.9%, well below the 92% the Department of Health says is needed to maintain herd immunity. As many as 125,000 U.S. children born in the late 1990s did not get the MMR vaccine at all.
Despite all of this, the Royal Free Medical School continued to keep Dr. Wakefield employed as one of their gastroenterologists. Meanwhile, the public had no idea that Wakefield was being paid by lawyers to build a case against vaccines. Many believed Wakefield's intentions were altruistic. Some even believed that Wakefield might end up winning the Nobel Prize for these groundbreaking results.
This begs the question, was Dr. Wakefield trying to heal people, or was he greedy for money and fame at the expense of children's health? Was he just as indoctrinated as the frantic parents he advised?
The first clue to his motivations is in a draft of the Lancet paper itself. In addition to covering his findings, it proposes ideas for a new company. One that would set up diagnostic tests for Crohn's disease in concerned patients all over the world. This new company predicted a profit of £72.5 million a year, more than Wakefield could ever hope to earn as a professor in London. But was this just fortuitous? A man truly stumbling on a righteous cause and changing his career path? Or was Wakefield intentionally scamming everyone he came in contact with?
After his study was released, Wakefield tried to raise £2.1 million from investors for his company, which he named Immunospecifics Biotechnologies Limited. The company claimed they were searching for a replacement for these vaccines. Whether or not they had other intentions was never made clear.
But can we infer more of his possible intentions from what happened next? In the early 2000s, the Lancet Medical Journal made a fascinating discovery. They had investigated Wakefield and found his methods did not hold to a scientific standard. More importantly, they realized that colitis was not present in any of the 12 children from Wakefield's study. Their discovery voided Wakefield's research. and Lancet editors began working on a statement of retraction of the 1998 article.
However, the information was already out there. Newspaper headlines could not be unpublished. People were no longer getting their routine vaccinations. Damage had already been done.
Now it was time for Wakefield to defend his debunked results. So he emphasized his brand new medical diagnosis called autistic enterocolitis. He claimed that autistic enterocolitis was what showed up in these children, not Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis.
Symptoms of autistic enterocolitis are chronic constipation, bloating, and reflux, in combination with developmental regression. Wakefield speculated that this happened because of material passing from the gut wall into the rest of the body, and autistic enterocolitis shows a unique and distinct pattern of inflammation in the gut, which could easily be confused as Crohn's.
With its unverified new diagnosis, Wakefield's paper held at least some merit amongst anti-vaxxers. Wakefield was desperately trying to cling to some small sense of legitimacy. Whether Wakefield genuinely believed in his results is still unknown. But he didn't plan to stop just because he was being investigated by medical experts.
This is when Mark Pepys entered the scene. He was the new head of medicine at Royal Free and the school's biggest name. Pepys himself was known for his work with blood proteins that helped to identify the compounds of a disease, which led to improved diagnostics and treatments for patients with a variety of ailments. So Pepys knew what Wakefield was up to, and he was not a fan. In fact, he found him to be downright unethical.
Mark Pepys spearheaded a backlash against Wakefield throughout the Royal Free Medical School. But the school felt an obligation to defend its staff, even the controversial ones. So the school promised to find Wakefield 150 more children to study and give ileocolonoscopies to. They wanted him to replicate the results of his 1998 Lancet paper.
They were just as desperate as Wakefield was to prove there was a link between vaccines and diseases. Repeating the study on 150 more children felt like a risk worth taking.
But 3 months went by, and Wakefield did nothing. He took in no new subjects and did nothing to further his research. He was still on the staff payroll, but he refused to replicate his study. Perhaps he knew it was unreplicable, or perhaps he knew that his results wouldn't be in his favor and didn't want to subject any more children to his neglectful experimentation.
Wakefield blamed his refusal to perform the study on the school. He claimed they weren't giving him enough academic freedom.
Following this, Wakefield was let go from his position at the Royal Free Hospital in October 2001. Wakefield would never repeat the experiment, thus never proving his hypothesis. A hypothesis that was still causing mass hysteria at home and overseas.
In 2003, the JABS class action lawsuit against the vaccine manufacturers was dropped. Hundreds of families had spent endless amounts of time and energy fighting against a common enemy. Ultimately, it ended up costing millions in legal aid.
Soon, Dr. Wakefield was being investigated by the General Medical Council, a public body that maintains the official register of medical practitioners within the UK. The General Medical Council is in charge of protecting, promoting, and maintaining the safety and health of the public, and Wakefield was certainly threatening everything they stood for.
In 2003, a British journalist named Brian Deer also began looking into Wakefield. Deer was a journalist, not a scientist, but he was certain that Wakefield was more than just a professional who had been proven wrong. Deer believed Wakefield was a man who was actively unethical, indoctrinated by his own beliefs, and subsequently scamming millions of people.
Wakefield fell further into hot water. In 2004, 10 of the 12 co-authors on Wakefield's Lancet paper retracted their interpretation of Wakefield's data, publishing a statement that read, "No causal link was established between MMR vaccine and autism, as the data was insufficient."
Many of the parents of the children in the study denied the conclusions Wakefield had made. It became clear that patient number two, Michael, didn't ever have Crohn's disease to begin with and was sensationalized to prove Wakefield's point.
It was later revealed none of the children in the study were experiencing colitis and autism in conjunction.
Deer also found that, despite the paper's claims that all 12 child subjects were, quote, normal pre-vaccination, developmental delays had existed before the kids had even received their MMR shot.
Wakefield's misinformation campaign was coming to light. A report from the BMJ states, "A great deal of thought and effort must have gone into drafting the paper to achieve the results he wanted."
Even ignoring the payments and the fame, most professionals agreed that Wakefield must have intentionally obscured the facts. There was no other way to explain all that had gone on. Deer's findings were the final nail in the coffin.
Although Wakefield had received large sums of money, his reputation was completely tarnished throughout Britain. Unable to practice medicine in the UK, Wakefield escaped to Austin, Texas in 2004. According to the co-founder J.B. Handley of an anti-vaxxer group called Generation Rescue, "Andrew Wakefield is Nelson Mandela and Jesus Christ rolled up into one to his American anti-vax following." In Austin, he allied with Jenny McCarthy, TV personality and spokesperson for the movement. Nobody would be able to undermine him in the United States, where the next chapter of the anti-vaccination movement was about to reach new heights.
Thanks for listening to Medical Mysteries. Next week, we'll continue the story of Andrew Wakefield and the anti-vax movement and look at the possible medical explanations for autism and Crohn's disease. Did Wakefield genuinely believe what he was preaching? Were these diseases linked to vaccination? We'll find out next week.
For more information on Andrew Wakefield, amongst the many sources we used, we found BMJ's article, "How the Vaccine Crisis Was Meant to Take Money," and Seth Mnookin's "The Panic Virus," extremely helpful to our research.
You can find all episodes of Medical Mysteries and all other Parcast originals for free on Spotify.
Not only does Spotify already have all of your favorite music, but now Spotify is making it easy for you to enjoy all of your favorite Parcast originals like Medical Mysteries for free from your phone, desktop, or smart speaker.
To stream Medical Mysteries on Spotify, just open the app, tap Browse, and type Medical Mysteries in the search bar.
And don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Parcast and Twitter at Parcast Network.
We'll see you next time.
Medical Mysteries was created by Max Cutler and is a Parcast Studios original. It is executive produced by Max Cutler, sound design by Anthony Valsic, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro, Carly Madden, Travis Clark, and Paul Mahler. This episode of Medical Mysteries was written by Amanda Prager, with writing assistance by Maggie Admire, and stars Molly Brandenburg and Richard Rossner.